Hi, everybody, and welcome to this special episode of the Comedy Podcast. I'm your host, Tubi Sade. On this episode, I was joined by Aaron Snyder, who is the VP of QA at Alitex. Aaron is also an AMI faculty member, and he runs a YouTube channel called Quality Systems Explained, where he has more than 100 videos focused on drug and device QMS topics. On this episode, expect to learn from Aaron about some of the important changes in QMSR. He dives into the differences in QMSR related to risk management, traceability reporting, and independent review. I also asked Aaron a bunch of questions related to how he approaches learning new regs. During the interview, I was just really impressed with his ability to recall the details of it, but also to bridge the gap between the proposed rule and the final rule and a bunch of other topics. Aaron also talks about the impact of QMSR on MDSAP companies and those who don't use it. And with that, here is Aaron Snyder.
Hello, Combi Nation. My name is Tubi Sade. I've spent over a decade in medical device, pharma, and combination product development. Our industry feels complicated sometimes. Drugs, devices, clinical trials, submissions, sterilization, validation, design control, risk management, market access, reimbursement. The list goes on. My goal is mastery, so this podcast is to ask questions I have to people who may have the answers. Each week on the Combinate podcast, I talk to someone about their area to further understand and simplify. Whether you're a pharma person trying to understand the next wave of products, or a device person trying to navigate a pharma system you're unfamiliar with, or a newbie in both areas, I invite you to listen. And together, we can simplify by combinating.
I didn't want to waste your time by asking you questions like, what are the high-level changes and that. And I saw that you do a course on 510Ks and PMAs, and I think one of the interesting little details in the QMSR is around traceability. So what's changing there?
Yeah, so in the new QMSR, there are basically what the FDA has done is they've incorporated by reference 1345. And within that, they've had to clarify some stuff. So there's some definitions that they've clarified. They have a distinct call out for four other federal regulations. And those other federal regulations are Part 803, which is adverse event reporting, called medical device reports in the U.S., Part 806, which is corrections and removals, Part 821, medical device tracking, and Part 830, which is UDI, unique device identifier. So they have a specific call out in 820.10, and they say, above and beyond the requirements in 1345, you have to meet the requirements of these other applicable federal regulations, the four I spoke about, as they relate to your device when they're applicable. On the traceability side, in 1345, we have section 7.5.9, which basically requires medical device manufacturers to define the extent of traceability that they will have in their quality system. And there's a call out that says for active implantable devices, you actually have to have traceability, like it's a firm requirement. So what the FDA has done is they've said, look, we have a traceability requirement that's in 821 medical device tracking, and we also have the UDI requirements. So they point to both of those and say, in addition to what's in ISO, you have to consider these other federal regulations that we have and meet those requirements when they're applicable to your device.
And a UDI is, broadly speaking, a local regulatory requirement, right? There's no global...
There is a global UDI. Yeah, FDA has their UDI regulation, but there's also a global one. Now, I'm not expert in UDI, but I know that there is a global one because there's UDI in Europe as well.
Yeah, I know that there's UDI in Europe. I know that there's UDI in other places. I guess my question is there a unified UDI expectation that the FDA would have been able to point to in the stead of? Is there a ISO 13485 for UDI that the FDA could have pointed to in the same way that they were pointing to 1345 for the QMSR?
I'm not able to answer that. I know that they have their own federal regulation, and in the announcement to update 820, they did not propose to update 830. So 830 is the UDI regulation.
Staying the same.
Yeah.
What are the changes that you think are going to be most impactful outside of that? Because there were four new sections other than the one that just says that we're incorporating by reference, right?
So the way that when we got the proposed rule, it looked like it was going to be ISO plus because there were a lot of definitions.
Actually, I guess before you answer that, because I'll be honest, I hadn't spent a whole lot of time on the proposed rule.
Yeah.
And so the final rule is what I know, and I didn't go back and check what was in the proposed rules.
Yeah.
I noticed in the comments that the FDA seemed to take in a lot of what was commented on by industry. But what are the meaningful changes between the proposed rule and the final rule?
Right. So in the proposed rule, there was more content. So there were more differences, let's say, between
is that right?
1345 and what the FDA was going to add on top of that. And this, I was at the AAMI Nexus conference last week, and when they presented, the FDA, they rolled out the QMSR at that, and they basically said, look, wherever there was a difference between what FDA required in the old 820 and what 1345 required, what we did after we got all the comments back is we said, look, is the intent the same? If the intent is the same and it's just different language, then we're going to go with 1345. In the proposed rule, there were a lot of things that the FDA said, specifically on the definitions and the concepts of clarification, I think is what it was called. In those areas, there was a lot more content because there were definitions that were different. They talked about validation of processes versus process validation. There was a lot of stuff in there that is now all gone. So if you look at the 827 is the incorporation by reference. And in 82010 is when you get into the pointing to the other federal regulations. Then you have 82035 and 82045. So it's just records, basically, and packaging and labeling controls. Realistically, where the FDA ended up with the final rule was, we're going to use 1345 as it is, as a whole. We have four definitions that are FDA-specific definitions that we have to keep because they are in the Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act. They're actually in the law. So we have to keep these in place.
And but those then, four are?
I don't specifically recall. They're in 820. They're in the new rule. They're in the final rule. Yeah. One of them is related to safety and effectiveness.
Oh. Effectiveness
versus safety and performance. So there's a little bit of minor differences there, but it's for all practicality when you implement a quality management system, it's not that big a deal. So the two additional requirements that the FDA kept were related to records and packaging and labeling controls. And that's because 1345, when you get to packaging and labeling, it just says, you will control the operations for packaging and labeling. And the FDA historically has had the stance that a majority of the recalls are labeling related, packaging and labeling related. So they wanted additional controls put in place on that. So they kept the requirements from the old 820 and put them in 82045 around packaging and labeling.
And so there's I didn't follow what the meaningful difference was because it sounds like it's the same. You need to control it versus.
So 1345 just says in clause 751, it just says you will have defined and controlled operations for packaging and labeling. That's it.
Oh, just, you just need to define it versus.
You'll just define it and control it. Where the FDA is saying, look, you need to address label integrity. You have to address label correctness before you put it on. And you have to, there's specific things that they want you to do in packaging and labeling that's not clearly called out in 1345. So that's what's the additional call out is in the new rule.
Why did they create a new section for it?
So it used to be 820-120 and 820-130. All of that went away. So they scrunched it down and it just went up to 820-45, which is a new section. But if you looked at the old 820, it started with 820.5, 820.20, 820.30, and then 820.40, and then it skipped up to 820.50. So there was no 45 last time. So they probably used 5 just so that no one was confused, just like they used 35 for records, so no one is confused. Because in the old 820, records was covered in 820.180, and now 2035. So it's probably, I don't know the reasoning. There's probably some government regulation that defines how they do that, that I don't know about, but I would assume they did it so that people didn't get confused and for clarity.
I was a little confused about the reserved in brackets all over the place. And then I looked up on archives.gov what that means. And it basically means they hung up the jersey and they can use it if they want to, but right now they're just saying they're intentionally leaving it blank, basically. And so when they, I think it's section C through O that are now reserved, and
right,
everything that was there before that they're keeping is now just split between A and B. There's basically the general and the weeds,
yeah,
whatever the terminology is. The records, I thought, was interesting. What's not an ISO that they needed to, because records is like, if it's not written, it didn't happen. And those things are so just ingrained in industry that I thought it was peculiar to me that they established a section on that, like it was something questionable.
So this is where in the old 820, there was a lot on records. There was device master record, medical device. Now I'm using
DMR,
ISO
DHF,
language. Right. Sure. DHR, DMR, DHF, DHR, all of that's QSR. There were all these different record types. And then they were through in their own section of 820. So they simplified that by adopting 1345. Now there are still specific things that they want in some of the records. So if you look at ISO 1345 for complaints, it basically just says, you'll manage your complaints, you'll have a procedure, and you'll meet any local regulatory requirements, okay? You'll report adverse events, all of that stuff. The FDA, in the complaint record, they want the name of the complainant, the date that it happened, the device, any UDI or lot number. So there's, in that record section, 820.35, one of the callouts is complaint records have to have this minimum information in it. And it's 7 items, and it's the same 7 items from the old 820. So there's also a call out about, so it's complaints in the records area, and there's, man, I'm drawing a blank. I should have it in front of me. There's a few other things, and it's just the additional stuff that FDA wanted to ensure they were in the records, because ISO treats records generally across the quality management system as evidence of conformity.
Yeah. And so that was a whole thing that I was wondering about around QSIP, because, sorry, I'm just looking at the QMSR to see what else beyond. It looks like it's complaints and records of servicing.
Servicing. Yeah.
Kappa.
So servicing records.
Yeah, servicing and then confidentiality.
Yeah, so just 3 items: complaints, the servicing, and what they wanted with the servicing is the link into the complaints and the Kappa process, making sure that the service records are reviewed for reportability if they meet the definition of a complaint and it led to an adverse event at that point. And then the confidentiality is just letting manufacturers know the FDA treats the records as confidential records, and the company needs to help them. So if you stamp everything confidential, you're going to devalue that because records can be requested in with a FOIA request, a Freedom of Information request. But what they're trying to say is be smart with your confidentiality stamp because your CAPA procedure is not confidential. Your product specs are, but your CAPA procedure is not, right? Your internal audit procedure, it's not confidential. Like, we all do internal audits the same way. But the results of internal audits, those probably are confidential.
But, okay, so is that right? So somebody through a FOIA request could request a company's SOP?
They can FOIA your, now if they knew that the government have it, but they FOIA all the time. People will FOIA basically the EIRs, so the inspection reports, and they try to FOIA, for me to say today. The actual 43s sometimes that they get made public
those they get from the FDA, but I'm saying like a company's SOPs can be FOIA'd?
If their records in the FDA system as evidence, they could be FOIA'd.
Oh, I see. Okay.
I'm sorry, I didn't make that connection. But right, remember when they're doing an inspection, they're collecting evidence.
Yeah.
You hope it's evidence of conformity. And most of the time, they're not taking procedures with them, I guess. If they're particularly horrible procedures, they may take them with them because it's evidence that the procedure was bad. But most records that they're collecting are like complaint records, CAPA records that show that you didn't follow your process. So,
and so the four things, just to go back on the control of records in the QMSR, number one is complaints. Number two is servicing. Number three is UDI. And number four is the confidentiality.
Yeah.
Because we went.
We skipped UDI. But the UDI is mainly for the batch records. But also, once you have the UDI in your batch record, it's traced through to your service records, to your complaints, and all everything to that batch record.
Now, going down to the evidence of conformity. In my limited subjective experience with ISO cert audits, they're looking for, okay, are you doing this? Are you not doing it? Show me an example of you doing it.
Mm-hmm.
You need to work on this, that, the other. Here are the gaps and so on. And they happen every year on an ongoing basis and so on and so forth.
Recertification, surveillance, recertification, for the most part, yes.
Yeah. FDA inspections are not like that.
Different approach.
And a different approach. Different approach. And what do you think the impact is there?
So the FDA, if you have an MDSAP certificate, they will accept that in lieu of a routine inspection. So if they reach out to you and say, hey, we've got to come on site to do a routine inspection, you can provide an MDSAP certificate. The FDA will take that and say, okay, we don't need to do the routine inspection, right? Now, if they want to come on site for a PMA, pre-market approval inspection, or for cause, because there was a recall, it doesn't matter whether you have an MDSAP certificate or not, they're coming to do the inspection. So the FDA is not going to issue ISO certificates. So if they come on site to do an inspection, they're inspecting you to the QMSR, which happens to utilize 1345, right? They're not issuing ISO certificates. And the only certificates out there that they will utilize would be the MDSAP ones. So that,
but then
answer your
like,
question?
Yeah. I think that if you look at the QCIT approach,
right,
they're following a flow that's not really looking for evidence of conformity. It's looking for issues.
That's the biggest difference. Your ISO guys, the registrars, whoever they are, the auditing organizations under MDSAP, they are looking for to confirm conformance. So do you have a procedure? Yes. So then they document the procedure number. Give me three records. You give them three records. Okay, the three records look good. You met your procedure. I looked at these three records. FDA is not doing that. So they'll say, give me your complaint procedure and here's 60 complaints that I want. So they will read your procedure and then they're going to go, complaint, got a complaint, got a complaint, like all through all 60 of them to make sure that you're making the right decisions and you're following your procedure and you're doing your MDRs on time. So the main difference is the FDA is looking for non-compliance, not specifically conformance. So they will ask for, in a standard QCID inspection, 11 records, but in some other areas, much more. And they will go through every single record, looking to make sure that you made the right decision. So specifically with complaints, they'll get a list from you and they'll see all of these different complaint. Most larger companies will have complaint modes, failure modes, whatever. And they'll look for stuff where they were reportable or where it was something that could be reportable. They'll ask for those records and they'll look to make sure you're making the right decisions. And when you're not, they'll ask for more records in that same area. And once they get multiple records where you didn't make the right decision, boom, we have a 483 at that point. Your ISO guys never dig that deep, ever. At least in my experience, they don't do the deep dive that the FDA does.
And I think the other distinction is they don't need to look at every, when my, again, it's all limited and subjective, but my experience with ISO is that they're making sure that you meet everything.
So on the recertification, they'll audit the full quality system. They're supposed to. They're supposed to audit everything. Yeah. Then on your surveillance, they'll look at half of it. And then the next surveillance, they'll look at the other half. And then when they come back for recertification, they're supposed to look at everything.
They'll look at the whole thing.
Yeah.
But FDA can just look at one quality subsystem element and that'll be it.
Yeah. We don't know what the new inspection technique will be. They are going to replace QCID. And once they do, then we'll know a lot more. What we know with QCID is that they have, basically, they come in, they start with management. That's one of the system elements. Then they go into basically improvement, complaints, Kappa, MDRs. And then they have a choice at that point. If it's a routine inspection, they're going to do one of either design or production or process controls. So that's for routine inspection. It's management, complaints, Kappa, either design controls or production process controls. Now, if it's a PMA inspection, a pre-approval inspection, they're going to look at everything. They're going to do the full quality system. So it depends on the inspection type for the FDA, how much of the quality system they look at.
Okay. So then I'm in some ways incorrect because they have a streamlined approach for routine inspections that flows from management responsibility to complaints in Kappa, and then dealer's choice on whether it's going to be a deep dive into design controls, risk management, and that, or looking at a PMP.
Yep, that's the approach.
If it's a PMA, then there's no dealer's choice.
They're going through everything. Yep.
Okay. And so we'll have to just wait and see what comes out of a QCID update.
Yeah. Everyone wants to know what it's going to look like. So once it comes out, there'll be maybe I read it and then we talk.
What are your thoughts on the QMSR? Because for me, I think it's overwhelmingly a positive thing.
Oh, it's definitely a positive thing. So harmonization is always good. And if you remember, you probably don't because you're more pharma coming in the device through combo products. So it didn't change anything in part four except for the ISO references. So part four is still the same. Now, when 820 was updated from CGMPs to the quality system regulation, the QS reg, that's the first year that ISO 1345 came out. And if you look at that 1996 version of ISO 1345, it mirrored 820 at that time, as in it wasn't the process approach. So you had a bunch of distinct requirements that weren't unified into a process. But then 1345 updated in 2003. And if you were around at that time, ISO 9000 1, ISO 9001, updated in the year 2000 to include the process approach. So we're going to have the processes that feed into each other. The improvement process that looks over everything, design feeding into manufacturing, manufacturing into post-market. So it's all process-based. 1345 went to the process approach, and then it looked different than 820 at that point, because 820 was still a bunch of distinct requirements that weren't set up as an overarching process. So the inputs and outputs have different processes. The 2016 update of 1345 basically filled in the gaps between that old 820, which wasn't laid out as a process approach, and 1345, which allowed the FDA to harmonize, to incorporate it. I have to be careful with harmonize, because yes, they harmonized, but the way the FDA talks about it is we are incorporating 1345 by reference. And when they gave us the final rule, they basically, wherever they could, they harmonized, which was fantastic for us. It's a big benefit. Any large company that does MDSAP, this isn't that big a deal, because they already meet the requirements of both. For smaller companies,
so they just got to pull out the redundancy if they have it.
And the redundancy is not a big problem, right? It's an opportunity for simplification for companies to save money, right? But if they leave it there, as long as they're following it, it's not going to cause a compliance problem. So what if you're in a large company, what you have to do is in your management review, you're going to have to say, look, there's this new regulation. We have the new QMSR, and explain what it is. You'll probably need a quality plan or some sort of impact assessment to say, this is how we're going to implement it within our quality system over the next 2 years. So we have a 2-year implementation date. And then make sure that it's fully implemented before go live. And fully implemented for a large company is just, to me, streamlining. There's not a lot of heavy lifting there. If you're a small company who only provides product in the US, okay, so you don't have an ISO certificate, you've never had to deal with ISO, okay, there's going to be some more work involved. Again, not a lot of work, but there's more work. You have the process approach that you have to worry about. Risk management is now explicit. It's called out everywhere in 1345, where in 820, it was only in the design validation section. So there are things that smaller companies will have to do to get up to speed with it. But even then, when you looked at 1345 and the old 820, they were 95% similar. So maybe you have 5% of work to do.
Incorporated it by reference because it was so similar. So
correct.
I get that.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you a little bit about how you approach these kind of new regulations and just your learning approach, because everything that you're going through is unscripted, right? I didn't tell you we're going to go through this section. So prepare, and you're like listing all of the changes out. So how do you approach the learning of these things?
Yeah. So with the new QMSR, we were waiting for the final rule, right? And I had read the proposed rule, and in the AMI courses that I teach, we get a lot of questions. Okay, what's going to happen here? What do you think? How is it? So I've been talking about it for quite a long time, and then the final rule. So sitting down and reading the final rule, all the comments, and the first 5 or 6 comments aren't very helpful. They're like, we think this is awesome that the FDA is harmonizing it. And the FDA is like, I'm glad you think it's awesome, right? So they're not that helpful, right? But then you get into some of the questions around specific topics, like, okay, in the old 820, you required an independent reviewer to be part of design controls or to be part of design review. And now ISO doesn't require that. ISO just says specialists. Okay. So are you still going to require an independent reviewer? The FDA answered that. They're like, look, we are okay with the language in ISO. We also think that including someone independent is a good practice. So they're saying, yeah, we still would like you to do this, but we're happy with the language in ISO. So as long as you meet that, you're okay.
And so I actually hadn't known about that. So the distinction is that just because, like you said, I've been working in the dual systems. So
yeah,
I didn't actually think about ISO doesn't require them to be independent.
That's
the difference. Is that true?
Correct. So in 820 for design review, it required you to have an independent reviewer.
Yeah.
In 1345, it just says you'll have a design review. You will include the appropriate people from that design stage and any needed specialists. There's no mention of independence. So now that the FDA is harmonized with 1345, once the new QMSR is implemented, you actually don't have to have an independent reviewer as part of your design review. What the FDA said in the preamble, though, is that it's a good practice and you should do it. So in that preamble, there are some, it sounds like there are requirements in some sections. But that question about the independent reviewer was actually asked at the conference last week. And they basically said, yeah, we get it, right? It just says specialist. So you guys should do what's appropriate for your device.
As we move to close, what's a book that changed your life?
My mentor asked me to read two books when I came out of college and I was going into the workforce. One of them was Good to Great, and the other one was First Break All the Rules. Now, both of them are dated now because it's 20 plus years on, but I found both of them very helpful in my career, basically trying to be a leader and manage teams and lead people. So I'll give you the standard one there. Good to Great.
I actually, Good to Great, I've read also, but First Break All the Rules I haven't heard about. So that's what I always like to shake the tree, even if I ask a question before, because the book recommendations are always super helpful. Where can people find you, Aaron?
I'm on LinkedIn, so look me up there. I've got a YouTube channel. I haven't got any new content out for a while, but I hope to get back on it, especially with the new QMSR. I need to refresh everything, so we'll go back through the 1345 now. But that's how you can get a hold of me and send me any questions you want. And I hope to come back and chat with you later. QMSR, whatever, yeah, just let me know.
Absolutely. Great having you on again, Aaron.
Thanks, man.